This is Petey Page.
I am Mike.
J-Mac.
Brutal Dudes.
We're missing our third man, Pete, but he's trapped in the mountains in the snow, fighting bears and doing all sorts of other mountain man stuff. So, but we have a special guest to fill in his spot today. We have two of the members of Bad Mary.
Hello.
Hey, everyone out there. How's
Thank you for having us.
You're welcome. Introduce yourselves.
Sure. My name is Amanda, Amanda Mack. I am lead vocalist for Bad Mary.
My name is Mike Staub. I am the bass player, and I do provide some backing vocals in Bad Mary. I've also been credited as being the kazoo player.
Yes.
On at least one track.
Our most recent release, yes.
Does that mean you weren't credited on the other tracks, or
yeah,
only one track featuring you?
We use a lot of kazoo, and it was really nice to finally get that credit.
It's an underserved instrument, I feel like, in any genre.
Yeah, I mean, I really do think that the importance of kazoo is understated.
It's been part of the Bad Mary mission to bring more kazoo to the world. So thank you for that.
It's an admirable goal.
Yeah, we really
do what we can. You know,
we're pro kazoo awareness here.
Yeah, Mary. It's funny that we bring this up. I was thinking about this today. Like,
you were thinking about kazoos today?
No, I was thinking about recorders. Right.
Okay.
That's another instrument. Like, why did it always baffled me that like that's the first instrument that most people actually like get like to do.
Yes.
And it's like, why is that not, does that not carry on? Like, why is there not like a professional recorder player? Or like, I'm sure I could probably find one if you look it up online or something, but like you feel like if that's the instrument that most people are started on, like you would carry it with you the rest of your life, like that you could play recorder.
I don't know. Do you know any elves?
I don't know. Billy's getting weird with the Eagles being in the Super Bowl, so there might be some running around somewhere.
So funny enough, you bring up the recorder, and obviously the only recorder songs I know, like off the top of my head, are Hot Cross Buns and Stairway to Heaven. So
standards.
Funny enough, on our Christmas EP, which we put out at the end of 2022. A Very Bad Christmas, we actually do feature, right, Amanda?
Recorder is also present, not on the same track as the kazoo, but there is also a recorder.
I mean, that's a lot if you put them both on the same track. Like, I feel like you're asking a lot.
Yeah, at that point, you need like a toy xylophone and one of those Fisher Price pianos.
Yeah, seriously. Or like the Muppets one that plays the basic song, that the little blue one with like Baby Kermit on it.
Oh.
I had that for years. That was how I learned anything about piano.
Now you bring up the Muppets, another favorite thing of mine. Oh my goodness.
Hey, we're gonna play piano now.
We have a previous episode where we had Dirty Muppets. That wasn't I honestly don't remember the name of the episode, but I know it's out there somewhere because I listened to it and I was like, that's a little more crude than I thought it was gonna be when it came out. Whatever, it happens.
So is one of your goals then at this point to be known as maybe the world's greatest kazoo player, or at least the world's most famous kazoo player?
Well, now it should be.
Yeah, I think
if it wasn't, are there still time for 2023 resolutions?
Yeah, I think you're only a month out. I think you're fine.
Yeah, we're good. We can make that happen.
Other than obviously making the kazoo the powerful force in rock music it was always meant to be. How would you guys describe your sound to people who've never listened to you before?
Well, there's the long explanation that sometimes gets like a look of like, I don't know what that means. Or there's just the loud, fast, fun punk rock. But it's melodic. So I'll be like,
Yeah, there's like a melodic, like, you know, the best way to describe it is
CBGB era inspired modern melodic punk rock. That's the very long, like, sentence, but to boil it down, fast, loud, fun.
Yeah, fast, loud, fun is usually how we go for it. We play fairly short songs at fairly brisk tempos, and you know, we're out there to have a good time and have fun with folks. We've thrown around the the term glam punk recently.
There's a lot of glitter.
So it's really just kind of like a, it's like a fun thing. It's hard because you tell people punk and they hear and expect one thing, and then you tell people pop punk and they hear and expect something. And you know, you don't. It, listen, I understand genres are a thing. Like, I get it. But our music is loud. It's fast. It's punchy. It's very. You know, we like to have fun with pretty much everything we do. It's all about having fun.
But we're also we're a family band.
Yes.
Meaning the drummer is my father. And a lot of the musical inspirations have come from different eras, different times. Our guitarist was my professor in college. So we all have like a different background that kind of came into this soup and we just ran with it. And that's
I'm actually glad you brought the lineup up because, you know, reading a little bit about you guys to prepare for the show, that was definitely something that stuck out. How did this particular lineup come together with your father and professor in the band?
It's wild to think about it now because it's just part of like the makeup of our life. But stepping outside of the story, it is like wacky. So the main connection is Hofstra University for all of us. I was a student at Hofstra. My dad was a student at the time. His last semester was my first semester. Mike was a student. David was a professor. So we all were in that community, that environment, just not together yet. And David runs a band at the university that he still does. And it's like a party band for the drama department. So I was a performance major. David is a design and like on the tech side professor. So he does a lot of the design elements, whether it's scenic design, costume design. He does animations. He's animated a lot of our stuff. So he's used that in like everything. But he ran a party band and I happened to sing in the musicals. And the year that I joined the band was my senior year. So the vocalist had graduated and I got asked to join the band that Mike was already a part of at that time. So he was playing bass in what is called, still called, David and the Hendersons. Or were you rhythm guitar? You started as rhythm guitar.
We switched. I actually started mostly playing trumpet, and then I would play rhythm guitar sometimes, bass sometimes. And then when Amanda joined the band, we decided to kind of strip it down and just kind of do like, you know, guitars, drums, bass, and vocals. And then after that, we had a drummer with us. We became a cover band out of that called Madam X. And then we had a drummer with us, our good friend Rory. She moved down to Florida because she got a job.
Before that, usually this band, like a lot of people graduate and they move back home out of state or they, you know, get a job and they, you know, it ends when the school year ends. But this particular group, we were all still staying on Long Island. So yeah, we were having a lot of fun and we were like, do I want to keep going with this to see what happens? And then we became the cover band that started playing shows like in a city or other places on Long Island.
And then Rory left and she went down to Florida for a job, and she lives down there now. And
still a very good friend.
Yes. And we needed a drummer, and Amanda was like, I know a guy. And it was her dad.
The guy happened to be my dad.
And he joined the band. it was good.
But he had also played some of the productions because I was a theater student at Hofstra. So he had played in the orchestra or the pit for some of the productions at the university as well. So we were all kind of like around. It just wasn't until this happened that everything kind of clicked. And fast forward like a decade and it's still this lineup and it's literally family, but like we've grown to like
And then like a year after Amanda's dad Bill joined the band is when we started writing original music and we changed our name to Bad Mary. So that's kind of how that all happened.
Also, for anyone listening, Mike and I are married, by the way. Yes. I know that it didn't translate that we're family. So that also happened during the course.
13 years of the band. It's things happened over that time. But so we've been Bad Mary for a little over 10 years, but the band's been together for about 13.
What does Bad Mary come from? Like the
we have a Facebook Messenger chat that we've had for 13 years. And when we wanted to do original music, we realized we needed a name change because at the time the band's name was Madam X when we were doing covers. And there was like a million bands named Madam X. There was a couple of movies. There was a painting. There was a bar. It was all this stuff. So it was like clearly not something we could use for original music.
Yeah. Like if you were to try to Google us, you would get
a bunch of stuff.
Nothing that was us at all.
So then what ended up happening is we needed something that like represented us. And it had to be something that was easily understandable if it was like spoken. Like it couldn't be like a tongue twister or something that was hard to say.
David's wife, Sue, had the best thing that I still think is great. You had to be able to shout it across a parking lot
and have someone understand it. Yeah, which is important. So then David, I believe, threw Bad Mary into the mix on our Facebook Messenger chat. And then it took us a little while to warm up to it, like right away, because every band name, it's like, I don't know, let's look. And then we all really came around and really, really liked it, like within that day. So then we just stuck with it. It doesn't really mean anything.
Oh, okay.
We just feel that it fits the vibe of what we're doing.
Good name.
Although,
thanks.
I get called Mary a lot on stage. So it's like, I'll get the, oh, are you Mary? I'm like, no. And then it's, who's Mary? And I'm like, I don't know. She's so bad. You know, so it's evolved to be this mystery person.
Yeah. It's like a Blondie situation, you know, almost where it's
you
like,
you could go full performance though. And like, you like twitch your head and be like, I don't know who Mary is. Hold on. Let me check. And then be like, and then like come back with a different voice and be like, I'm Mary.
Yeah. And, like, that would be
people out. That'd be funny.
That would be great.
I'd like that. That's a really good horror angle. I like it. Let's do it.
Build up a full Alice Cooper style show around it.
Yeah.
Why not?
Yes.
So you guys were mentioning how long you've been together, you know, looking at Spotify and things like that. You have a number of releases out. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, especially, you know, as the way people consume music changes, what is your preference as far as the way you approach writing and releases? Do you guys come at it from the standpoint of focusing on singles, EPs? Are you thinking about full length albums when you go into it?
It's,
it has changed.
It changes and it changes and it fluctuates within the system, right?
It is very interesting how music releasing has changed. Cause I still, I love an album. I do love that beginning to end kind of experience. And sometimes you have time to really get like a full story in there. So even though I do very much love the album form, we've been mostly EPs, I feel, with an emphasis. We have a couple singles per EP.
Yeah, it seems like EPs are our focus because they're kind of between a single and a record and a full album. We have two full albums, one of which is celebrating its 10th anniversary this year.
Oh my
and
God.
One of which we released in 2019. But we really like the EP in terms of like, you can throw together six new songs, and put an EP out and get people pretty excited about it. And we get to see how those songs kind of make their way into our live set. So I think, you know, our focus is really on EPs at this point. We did release like three singles in 2022, which will be as part of an EP that releases later this year called Trash and Glamour. But for the most part, EPs have kind of been our focus in general. I think it just started off as kind of like almost like a necessity, right? Because it's, you know, it's hard to get when we were recording in studios that we didn't operate. It was hard to get studio time, and studio time is very, very expensive. So it was like, all right, we can get in, we could do six songs, we could record it over a long weekend, and then we can move on with it. And I think we just kind of like that way of doing things. And when you have an EP, yes, it's not the full complete artistic thought that like an album is, but it's like half the full complete artistic thought that an album is. But when we released The Return of Space Girl in 2019, that was we actually kind of broke our mold there, and we were like, hey, we kind of want to do a full record again that doesn't tell a story, but it kind of does. It's got like all of the songs revolve around this kind of same similar sort of story event type thing going on. But now we're back on the EP train, and we'll see where that takes us. You know, I don't like to be, we like to kind of be creatively free with stuff. Singles are great, but I feel like sometimes it's like you get the single out, and then you get the other single out, then you get another single out, and then you're constantly in that kind of thing. And that works too sometimes for people. But for us, I think we're happiest when we're doing six track stuff.
I like there to be some cohesiveness to like a full piece, you know?
Yeah.
Now, is there any kind of a theme for the new EP? You mentioned how the previous album had a loose storyline to it, or is it just more a collection of the songs you've been working on?
This new EP, I feel like since the previous album was much more conceptual for us, the new EP was kind of us wanting to return to just like punching stuff, you know?
There's no story or theme per se, but the mentality we took when writing these new songs is to, but you know what's funny? It's the song, some of the songs we wrote on this one are complicated. So it's weird. It's like we took a step back in terms of this whole conceptualized thing, and we wanted to write stuff that was a little bit more just like loud, fast, and in your face. But at the same time, you know, the complexity of our songwriting hasn't changed, right? It's not like we're stripping it down or scaling it back. But it's weird, right? I feel like when we go back and listen to our records, whether they're EPs or albums, you can kind of tell all the songs that are together on a piece, like an EP or an album, like they were all like, they all kind of sound like they go together. And I feel like with Trash and Glamour, that's the same thing. You know, my mentality going into Trash and Glamour was, you know, I wanted to write something that was trashy. And serious, like the title of the album literally comes from my thought pattern. I was like, I wanted to write something that was trashy.
What?
Stupid Siri picking up my stuff. My iPhone is spying on me.
Chinese balloon is about to float over top of your house.
I know. What am I going to do? They're going to steal all my video games. So I think what I was thinking of was like, I wanted to write something that was like, you know, grimier and trashier, but at the same time have that sort of like fun flair to it that was, you know, a little bit more of that kind of vibe. And I think we've achieved it with what we've written so far.
Would you say it's trashy and thrashy?
It's trashy and thrashy. It's not nearly as thrashy as our one record Killing Dinosaurs, but
it sounds like a new genre, trash thrash.
Yeah, trash thrash. I like that.
I do like that.
That definitely sounds good. But no, it's like, you know, the whole thing is like we wanted to have fun with this kind of funk, this grime. Yep. It's like this like rock and roll dirt. You know? None of this makes sense.
No, it makes sense.
Makes sense to me, well, guys.
There's a track on it.
Good.
The last track on it, I think sums it all up with it's all trash.
Yeah,
that's the name of the latest single from Trash and Glamour. It's all trash.
Yeah,
that's the record.
Yeah, in a good way.
Now, can people expect this? Obviously, digitally. Are you guys going to do physical copies as well?
Yep. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Getting a nod. Yes.
Yeah, we will have physical copies. We'll sell them online. We'll mostly people buy the physical stuff at our shows, at our live shows. Also, you know, we're, you know, when we take this show out on the road somewhere, it's always good to have the physicals. So
when we take this show on the road, we'll be bringing the CDs with us.
Yep.
Now, will it just be CDs? Are you guys going to do vinyl or anything like that as well?
We would love to do vinyl. I think with that, if we garner interest, it may be like a pre-order situation if we do vinyl at some point.
Yeah, it would have to be
not ruling it out. We've definitely talked about it a lot. Nothing down the road yet, but it's not an impossibility.
I love vinyl.
Pocket Rockers.
Oh, what is that?
You don't know what those are? Oh, they are great. So they used to buy them at you get the player. It's basically just a cassette player, but it's you go to the store and you buy. They used to have singles on little mini tapes.
Oh, cool.
You just get the single and you pop it in and it plays in your player. And I remember I had Vanilla Ice.
Oh,
I had,
I'm so jealous.
What was the third base? Do you remember them? Third base.
Third base.
The Gas Face, I think, was the name of the song. Yeah, I had that one too. That was
I had Tiffany and Tears for Fears.
Oh wow,
Tiffany. Yeah.
Is this are these like the precursor to Hit Clips?
Oh, Hit Clips.
Yes,
I think it was something very similar.
Yeah. So you know what? Maybe we need to bring back the Hit Clip. You know what? With 3D printing nowadays, I'm pretty sure I could make one. What? And just, you know, have Bad Mary Hip Clips that, you know, or Hit Clips. I don't know if they were Hip Clips or Hit Clips.
I think they were Hit Clips.
Hip Clips?
Hit.
I can't pronounce words.
You say it however you want to say it.
That's right.
Make it look like a trash can.
Yeah, that would be great.
And then you can open the lid and put the tapes in.
This is good.
I'm for this. Listen, you guys are welcome to this idea too. I'm not going to, I have no copyright stuff.
All right.
Send us one when you make them. All right.
You know, if we make trash can Hit Clips that trash play clips. 60 seconds of our song, I will send you one. With Oscar the Grouch in it, but it won't be Oscar the Grouch because then we'll get sued. It'll be some other Grouch.
Yeah. Make him pink or something. We had this thing with the Philly Fanatic too, where they had to put like extra pieces on him and then they won the lawsuit and they took them all off and he looks normal again. For the Philly Fanatic, I guess.
Ozzy the Grump. There we go.
Yes. This went from a podcast to a brainstorm session.
It's a good idea. Listen, folks out there, if we see Ozzy the Grump anywhere, we're gonna know. All right, where this came out first. So hey, what happened with the Philly Fanatic?
Back in probably I think it was the beginning of this year, might have been last year. I with COVID, I don't really remember like the timeline. But,
yeah,
the original. So Jim Henson's Muppet Shop made the original Fanatic.
Yeah, it makes sense.
But what happened was the people who designed the Fanatic sold the rights to the Phillies to own it. But they felt like they didn't get enough money because of how much money the Fanatic has made over the years, which is a lot.
Yeah.
So they sued the Phillies for like retribution and the rights for the Philly Fanatic. So during the litigation, the Philly Fanatic, as it was, which was designed by these people, they were not allowed to have the Fanatic be the way it was. So they had to put enough changes on the Fanatic so it wouldn't anger the fans, but it also made it different. And they explained it away to the kids, which is the worst part to me, because I'm like, the fact that you had to explain to kids because some asshole took you to litigation was they put like fins on his like on his underarm, right?
Oh, nice.
They put different color tail on his back, and they gave him like his eyebrows were different colors and they were bigger. And they explained it away that he was evolving.
Oh, that's good.
In Philly for so long that he was evolving with his Galapagos friends, which are the other mascots. And then they won the lawsuit, and it was just like they just wiped the Fanatic clean back to normal. And they're like,
yeah,
they're like kids. There's no such thing as evolution.
No, don't believe in that. The Philly Fanatic didn't come out of the ocean and start transforming like Cthulhu.
Yeah, so there was this like big thing, and then the people lost, and everyone in Philly was like, of course they lost. What kind of an asshole thought he would win that litigation? Like,
it's like you sold the character.
That's wild.
I mean, it's the most recognizable mascot in sports, right? So it's like you can't mess with the Fanatic.
Yeah,
you know,
and if they would have went about it without litigation, I'm sure the Phillies and the Fanatic would have been like, here, we'll give you more money. Like, it's not a big deal.
Yeah,
like,
no. A loving why character. Not?
We make money hand over fist with this thing. Like, here's some more cash. Go have fun.
I'll tell you, you guys, the Phillies got they got some good mascots, man. I like Gritty too. Gritty's good. I like that guy. I like when him and the Philly Fanatic get together. They should go on. They should rob banks.
I totally think they should have a variety show. If not,
yeah, definitely.
There was a great. I'm sure you can find it easily. But when the Gritty character first came out, somebody did a whole photo series of them photoshopping Gritty into pictures of children crying.
Oh my god.
So it'd be like a little kid under a tree, balled up, crying, and Gritty is just like standing over him, menacing him, and things like that. There was like 20 or 30 photos. They're great.
I love it. I'm gonna look these up as soon as we're done here. See, I'm sorry, guys. I'm a Mets fan, so
there's nothing to be sorry about, man. You had a rough year this year.
You know what, Mr. Met though?
Mr. Met has a big baseball head.
He does have a big baseball.
I do like him quite a bit, but he's no Philly Fanatic.
I feel like a mascot in any New York team is just it's unnecessary.
Yeah,
you have like a built-in fan base. Like, you don't need that extra. It's nice to have, but like, I, you know,
It's New Everybody's York. Already
yeah.
yelling.
Yeah, like, everyone's already just... screaming. We don't need a guy to scream at.
Yeah, I was going to say, you could go on the subway and like there's enough people that could be mascots where you're just like, we're good.
Yep.
I don't know the sports, unfortunately.
Oh, that's
I like
all right.
Gritty because I can relate to that. Like as soon as I saw Gritty, I was like, yeah, that's a Philadelphian.
Yeah, I love it.
That love makes it. Sense. Yeah,
I'm so, yeah. I like a little sports, but I totally understand. But the mascots are great. They're good mascots down in Philly.
Yeah, they're working on the Sixers, but I still don't think it's that great.
Oh, I don't know that one.
That big cat looking thing. It's just it's uninspired. Really.
Yeah.
It's just,
I don't think Philly. I don't think big cat.
Yeah.
I think a fuzzy monster from the ocean.
Yeah. Galapagos, right. It sticks its tongue out of people and dresses in drag and strips and flashes people. Good. Like that's Philly.
Wait, is sports way different than I think it is?
Yes.
Yes.
Baseball's not what you thought it was yeah. all these years, dude.
Baseball's a totally different atmosphere.
I've been missing out.
You should go. So,
speaking of live entertainment like that, though. You did mention you guys would be taking the new EP out on the road. Do you have any kind of plans, like specific plans for touring or anything like that?
That was a segue. Oh, my goodness. Really that was good. Beautiful.
Very, very good.
That was gorgeous.
He teaches me shit every time we record because I'm like, damn.
Like
dude,
stripper mascots, you say. That reminds me.
You guys should get a Bad Mary stripper mascot.
Oh my
to
God.
Take
oh
on the road.
Yeah, that'd be like one of those Avenue Q puppets.
Oh, you could God. Get him to ride a quad like the Philly Fanatic and just roll up on people in the crowd.
I want a quad.
Or it'd be a tricycle. You wouldn't be able to. You probably wouldn't be able to bring the quad, you know, anywhere. But you could bring a trike.
Yeah, I could bring a tricycle. But do we have plans to go on the road, Amanda? Tell the folks out there.
Mm-hmm. Well, we play our fair share of local shows. So definitely when it comes out, we'll be taking it around home. But we are very excited, very, very excited. This has been about 4 years in the making now that we are, returning to Tokyo, to do another tour there. So once the EP is released, which should be this spring in June after that, the first stop is going back to Japan.
Here's a fun question. Do you like when you go to a foreign country to play? Do you look for like a local song that you can play to like get people on your side?
No. But
it's called, in wrestling, it's called a cheap pop. It's like
yeah.
You wear a jersey of the home team. And
yeah.
You walk in and you're like, ah, check that out.
Yeah. No. I mean, I'm very aware of the cheap pop. I had that Mick Foley video.
Yes.
What was it? Cheap pops and. Oh,
and,
I forget the other
thing. Hard Knocks and Cheap Pops, I think.
Hard Knocks and Cheap Pops. Yeah, have a nice day. Yeah, I know what that is, but no, we don't do that. I try to speak as much Japanese on stage as I possibly can.
Awesome.
I think that's usually what I try to do. I'm not amazing, but I could get some stuff across. Right?
Yeah. No, Mike, thankfully, also going back to Hofstra, Mike studied Japanese while at Hofstra and has kept up with it enough that it has been very, very helpful.
Yeah.
When we have either been able to go over to Japan or just even in communicating with the people that are there that listen to us, that reach out in Messenger and stuff. It's been very, very helpful. I know enough to just be like a polite human.
Yeah.
Mike can actually like...
I could say some things.
Conversation.
I could get a little
better.
Bit
of, I started to Duolingo again today. So
yes. So yeah, I've been studying Japanese on and off for a while now, and I studied abroad there when I was in college. And Amanda and I have been there together a few times, and then as the band, we went there once in 2019. We did a tour there, and we're going to do another tour in June. So I try to work on it like every day, so that I get a little better. You know, but it's tough. Learning a language is hard.
To answer your initial question, though, this is kind of the reverse of it. So we didn't have anything that was kind of like our pop, but every show we played, most of the bands threw in a cover, like a Ramones cover
yeah.
or something like that. So we would kind of get excited at like, oh my God, they're playing like a New York punk song, you
yeah.
know? So they were super nice to us also. Like we came back and framed this one like very nice letter that a band wrote for us and like recited while they were during their set,
yeah.
just kind of like welcoming us to the club and everything. So a lot of shows we noticed that like since we were on the bill, there was a lot of like
yeah
stuff we were appreciative to hear. So that's the reverse.
Yeah. But we've actually toyed with maybe doing one of our songs, and maybe taking a, like a verse and a chorus and singing that in Japanese too. But I mean, I would love, I've had ideas for a while to cover some sort of a Japanese tune when we go over there, but I'm not sure.
We do listen to like a lot of anime theme songs.
Yeah, I have music, a bunch so of anime theme songs.
There's a lot of those. We're like, oh, this one would be great.
You guys are missing Pete. Pete's a huge anime guy. He has he's a teacher and he has an anime club.
Oh, that's school, great.
And he's very hardcore anime.
Oh man.
Yeah. Sorry.
Is he stuck with us?
No, I mean, listen, this is great. Is he the guy in the mountains?
Yeah. Is he? So are you guys? You guys are New York based? Yes.
Yeah.
Are you New York City or are you closer to the mountains? Because he's in the New York mountains right now.
Oh,
fighting bear.
We're Long Island.
Okay.
Yeah. So we're Long Island, but the duck. Yes. The big Long Island duck. That's a big duck.
I've been to that stadium. I like that. That's a nice park.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, that's a good minor league park, man. That's a fun night in the summer.
Yeah, my cousin used to live in Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, so yeah.
I actually used to drive, which is stupid, but I used to drive up to visit him, and we would do like minor league parks. We go to Brooklyn Cyclones all the time.
Yeah, Coney Island.
They're a great. That's a great time. I win a bobblehead almost every time I go.
That's awesome.
And then we did Staten Island before they closed that down.
Yeah,
the Yankees, and then and what were they? Were the Pizza Rats or something? Right? They changed them to the Pizza Rats.
Oh like, yeah, I think you're right.
Pizza Rat.
Yeah. Yeah. Pizza Rat's a legend.
Internet folks. Phenomenon Pizza but Rat.
We're on Long Island and we're super close to the city. So we go to this, you know, we go to Manhattan a lot. Brooklyn, all that stuff. It's really easy. Like it's super easy for us to get to
just hop in the car.
Hop in the car and drive.
Levittown, New York.
I grew up in Hicksville, which is the town it's just north of Levittown. So I know Levittown very, very well.
I'm Levittown, PA.
Levittown, PA. Yeah. I know. Yeah, exactly. I remember growing up where I was from, and we had to, in like fourth grade, we had to study Long Island.
Yep.
And we studied Long Island, and you know, and for some reason it came up in conversation that there was another Levittown in Pennsylvania. We're like, what?
Yep, there's two Levittowns.
Do we go to war now? What happens?
Yeah.
I don't know. Wait, are all the houses in Levittown? Here's my question. This is really local, and I apologize for anyone who's listening outside of Levittown, Long Island, or Pennsylvania. Do the houses in Levittown, Pennsylvania have basements?
It depends. They're not built.
Okay.
They're
exactly.
Like ranchers, and they're
yep.
And I'm trying to think of the name of the other house. The two-story house is called something else, but the ranchers are the one story.
Yep.
It's just flat. Yeah, that's but the roads and stuff, the sections are all the same. And if you go to it's Willingboro, New Jersey. It's Levittown, New Jersey. Same thing.
What?
All the sections they have the same letter and all the streets start with the same letter. Yeah.
All right, let me tell you something. Is this some sort of like protective thing against like some sort of eldritch evil?
I don't know.
Where they built three towns that all are the same.
There's actually four. I don't remember what the state of the fourth one is. I want to say it's Ohio, but I don't think it's Ohio. It might be Delaware.
It makes sense. I mean, it was there. But no, see, I always wanted to know that about Levittown, PA. This is good to know.
I'm afraid if I go to another one that I'm going to find like my doppelganger. Like it's going to be a chubby dude like with a beard that likes the Mets, right? And then it's like, I'm going to see him in my Phillies gear and we're going to have to fight.
Is it like time cop rules though where you can't touch?
Yeah, you can't touch or if you have to fight them and kill them because that's what Hitchcock said. If you ever see your double, you have to kill him before they kill you.
Of course.
It can only be one.
Because, yeah, I totally get it. That's awesome. No,
that's wild.
That's, yeah.
How do you think the Springfields deal with it?
I don't know.
There's a lot of them.
A lot of Springfields.
Probably because of The Simpsons.
Yeah.
You think that they, with the fame of The Simpsons, it's everybody could just claim that as The Simpsons town. Even though everyone knows that's in Massachusetts.
It seems like it.
Oh.
Well, you guys.
I was segueing into something with them. I don't remember what it was.
I have no segue this time. You guys mentioned going to Japan, going back to Japan. How did that get set up the first time? Was that something where you were a part of a package tour? Do you guys just go out and get local support acts for that?
So It was weird. This is a little bit of a long story, so bear with me.
Bears
in the mountains in upstate New York.
Bears brought
us
there.
So no. What'd you say?
Not just a bit more bears.
Bears. I've always been a fan of Japan, Japanese stuff. And it's actually kind of influential to my writing, my music writing. I always, like, when I list all the bands and stuff that I was influenced by as a kid to influence my writing, I've always made sure to, like, include a couple of, like, video game composers that their music is very influential on my stuff. And like Amanda said before, some anime themes and things like that, which are, like, they stay with you forever. But when we were putting out some records, we were getting some music play, you know, as a band, we would joke, like, oh man, we should go to Japan. And then we wrote this song called Japan, which, like, going to Japan is, like, part of it.
That was the working title, yes. Also. And yes. Then that just became the title.
Yes.
So we're like, oh, Japan.
So it was kind of like, a self-fulfilling prophecy. So we were getting played on, and we still do get played on, Sirius XM. We were getting played on the Rodney Bingenheimer show, which is on every Sunday night. And Rodney played some songs that we submitted. I forget which ones, but we were, like, super gracious about it. And then Amanda and I, of all places, were in Walt Disney World at the Magic Kingdom. And Amanda had, like, gone into the bathroom, and I had sat down on, like, there's, like, this white wrought iron bench in front of the bathroom at, like, right before Main Street USA. And I was sitting down and I was checking my phone for, like, 5 minutes, and I go on Facebook and I get a notification. So-and-so, the Mike Rogers show in Tokyo, Japan is playing, has tagged you in a post. I'm like, well, what's this? And apparently we were getting played on the radio, by this fellow Mike. And I was like, what? So this is crazy. I took a screenshot. I sent it to the band and I was like, hey guys, this is happening. So,
you know, the scene, and, I've said this and people have been like, I have no idea what you're talking about, but, you know, the scene in That Thing You Do when, like, they're all kind of listening to the first single that gets put out on all the different radios and they, like, run into the middle of the street. That's what this felt like, because we're literally standing in, like, the most magical place on earth.
Yeah.
And this comes through, and it was like, wow, fireworks are about to happen. And is this real life? Like,
so, yeah. So I emailed, I messaged the show. I messaged this guy, Mike, and he messaged me back, and we had a back and forth. And I said, hey, we want to book a tour. Do you know anyone who books tours? And then he gave me a name, and I emailed this person from Inter Idaho Management, and her name is April, and I reached out to her, and we had a back and forth. I'm like, I want to book a tour of Japan, and she goes, all right, we'll book a tour of Japan. And then she booked a tour of Japan, and then we went. It was completely, you know,
something happened, and it's taught us a lesson of, hey, send an email.
Yes.
Or just reach out, because it was one of those, like, if it's going to happen, this is the moment that a door has opened into someone's listening over there.
Yeah.
So we took a shot in the dark and had put something that we'd been wanting to do as a pipe dream for so long of, like, you know what? Let's give it a shot. Let's put something out there. The worst thing that can happen is nothing happens. And one thing led to another, and we got to speaking with the right people, and it took off, and we had such an amazing time. Yep. We were received very, very well by the people over there. Everyone was super nice. People were singing along with things. It was wild.
Yeah, it was really, really crazy.
So we've been trying really hard. We were supposed to go back in 2020, and you know, something happened.
Yeah, the world definitely had other plans, and so yeah, we booked a tour with this management company. And you know, we were the headliner at all these shows, and we played with these great Japanese bands, and
we made friends. Like, we've been in contact with people that we played, like, like we would play a local show with here and then kind of start messaging and want to book more shows back and forth. Like that happened. And it was wild to be like, hey, we're messaging back and forth with people in Tokyo right now, being like, yeah, hey, when can we play another show together?
Yeah.
You know, so it's
when you say something happened that stopped you, you mean the McRib? That was when they stopped doing the McRib, right?
Yeah. Yes. Disastrous, disastrous event.
Yeah. I don't know.
The apocalypse. That's what
we'll never recover.
I don't know why they would stop issuing and offering the McRib. It was almost as bad as when they threatened to take away the cheesy gordita crunch.
Yeah.
Which is stupid. That's the only thing I get. So
as long as they don't come for my Crunchwrap Supreme, that's really
the Crunchwrap Supreme must be guarding with our lives.
With the Crunchwrap Supreme, I think that's here to stay. If I'm being honest,
seeing all of this time, I've been blaming the pandemic on Motley Crue.
Yeah, see, I mean Jared Leto. So that's my common segue into my Jared Leto rant.
That was good. That was another segue.
That's my segue.
That's good.
Wait, what did he do? Was it because he sent someone a pig's heart or something on the Suicide Squad?
Oh no, that's the other stupid. He tried to pick a fight with me.
What?
Yeah, oh yeah. Back when I was a youth, and he was in 30 Seconds to Mars. He was coming through the crowd, and for our listeners' sake, because I tell this story all the time, I don't want to go through like the details. It's our first episode of the podcast.
Oh, okay.
He basically runs into me, elbows me, and doesn't apologize. And I was like, "You could say you're sorry, dickhead." He didn't say he was sorry, and then we almost got into it, and then he was up on stage and we booed him so bad that he like cut his set short, and then he like threatened to jump off the stage and like come at me, and ever since then I've wished nothing but bad things on him. And it's what's really great is that he's not a good actor either, so like all of his movies have sucked since then. And it just continues to get worse and worse and worse. So we've created a thing here on the podcast called Friends Against Leto. And anyone is welcome to join. You don't have to. It's not a requirement of the podcast. But if you feel the same way we do about Jared Leto, we want to get like-minded people together so they can stop this horrendous travesty of a person from doing all the things that he does that just ruin Earth.
Like create COVID.
I can't breathe. Yeah,
so. or his wonderful Super Mario accent in House of Gucci.
It's or a shake.
Or his what is it, an Oscar in the movies? It's his Oscar winning performance in Morbius. Is
that right? Oh, well, it was Morbin time. So I mean
I think people saw the memes more than they actually saw the movie itself.
Yeah, because Sony was like, we're going to go put that back in the theaters because everyone on the internet likes it. And then the internet screwed them over again. And they're like, where are you going?
There was some quality comedy off of that, though.
If they rented out a movie theater and then just showed the memes, they would probably make their money back.
Oh, my God. They would have made profit on the movie.
Yes.
They'd be like, we need to make Morbius 4. We want Morbius.
What about Forbius?
Listen, I've read my fair share of Spider-Man comic books, and when I heard they were making a Morbius movie, I was like, boy, they really just scraped the bottom of the barrel here.
Did you see the whole slate of that they're doing?
Sony's slate is terrible.
It's terrible.
It's really bad. I'm not a fan of. I love Spider-Woman. Spider-Woman's great, but I don't know what they're doing with it. Black Cat could be cool, but like, I don't know, man. Like, you got Venom. They'll make a lot of money off Venom. But
does Rocket Racer need his own movie?
No,
I don't think so.
No, Rocket Racer. I would say most people don't know Rocket Racer.
Yeah,
I do. But
he's slated for a movie soon.
Yeah, I mean, Madam Web even is pushing it, man.
Stretching it. It's just they're just trying to milk it, and I'm like, you're gonna ruin this whole franchise for me, and then I'm gonna be mad because you already cast Jared Leto in it, and that was not. But like now you're gonna go on top of it and just keep making these movies, and then he got cast in Tron, and I'm like, what franchise are you gonna ruin next? Are you gonna do a Rollerball remake?
Oh well, I mean,
you know, let's cast him in something nobody likes, like Twilight. Then nobody will watch it, and then you'll be like, see, we told you this sucks.
I personally have never had a physical altercation with Jared Leto, but
I haven't either, but I saw him in Fight Club. I think he was in Fight Club.
That's one of my favorite roles of him, where he gets the shit kicked out of him. I also like Lord of War, where he gets hooked on drugs and then gets blown up. Listen, if they didn't give him Oscars for that, they're not going to give him Oscars for Requiem for a Dream. Sorry, it's just not happening.
I get it.
Sorry. I'm recruiting whoever I can. So I need an army to go up against an army. He's got his own cult now. So, you know, I'm going to have to fight off these little teeny boppers that he invites backstage with him and stuff.
You should have hit him with the suplex. I think a good German suplex would have solved this whole problem.
Oh, no, dude. He's getting a Macho Man elbow off the top if he's getting that's all I'm saying.
An elbow for an elbow.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, you're right.
That's it.
100%.
All right. So Macho Man's got the best elbow drop.
100%.
100%.
The only one that comes close, and this is getting really wrestling into it, is Michaels. He was Michaels the only one good. For me that because it's the showmanship of it. Elbow itself, Savage looked the best.
Savage looked really good. I was a fan of she doesn't wrestle anymore, but the Kairi Sane elbow drop was pretty good.
Yeah, pretty good.
She'd like kick her legs out and like totally drop it on someone's pretty good. Pretty good, but Macho Man is the best. I love Macho Man.
Just for his promos alone, he's
it's the cream of the crop.
Inspiration in my
macho
life.
Macho Man.
Cream of the crop.
He's the reason why I carry random things in like a shirt pocket that I can use in a speech. Just like if I'm talking to somebody at work, like I'm in a grocery store and they're like, they ask me a question and I'm like, cream wise. Yeah. And you just start throwing creamers at him. He does that in an interview.
One of my favorite things
ever.
Where does he get them from? Where are they coming from?
He's got no pockets. They're not bulging because that's his muscles. He's tight shirt 80s. And it's like, where's he hiding them? His bandana? Behind the sunglasses? I don't know. But he's pulling creamers out of everywhere.
It's magic, just like his album was.
It was his album.
Oh, no.
Wait, there's something you guys could cover. You could cover Be a Man Hogan by Macho Man Randy Savage and take it to Tokyo with you. They'll love it. They love wrestling.
Of course they do. That's great.
It's so fun.
Are the crowds like that? So, because I know the crowds for wrestling in Tokyo are like weird. Like, they're not weird, but like they're quiet for most of the time. Do they do something similar with like music, or are they hyped the whole time?
There's a lot. What we noticed, like the thing is, there's a lot of just fist in the air. Like, okay. We would be the first night we were there, it was just the whole room kind of gets into a rhythm and there's just a lot of fist pumping, and that was across the board. So that was like, okay, we know that it's good when everyone's arms are just in the air.
Yeah.
Like that Joan Jett, the I Love Rock and Roll video where they're just like into the camera, like not angled the right way. They're just going flailing all over the place. Or was it real synchronized?
It gets kind of synchronized, and it's cool to see from the stage. It's like everyone's kind of together in their energy.
That's nice.
It's really cool.
You guys like Baby Metal too? Because that's the only other Japanese band I really know is Baby Metal.
I find Baby Metal so fascinating. Yes, I do. I also really appreciate the dichotomy in the sounds is so interesting, because the music, like if you listen to Give Me Chocolate, because that's the one that I play in the car. If I have like a 5-minute drive, I just put that on and scream. And the music starts off so heavy, and then they come in and their voices just sit right over this like intense music. And I love that contrast. And I know that there are people that like give Baby Metal flack. I think they're great. Like, I love stuff like that because it's not what you would expect.
Yeah. Do you try and sing the words? I try and sing the words even though I have no idea what they're saying. I just try and make the same sounds.
Hey man, that's one step in the right direction.
I do that
with the Chainsaw Man theme song all the time.
Yeah.
All the time. That's been my earworm lately.
So you have the EP coming out. You have you said it was the second tour in Japan that you guys have done now?
Yes. Are you going to do a shirt like that says tour in Japan?
Actually, we didn't even tell you this. Yes.
Funny you mention it.
Because last time we did a lot of promotion before the show, before the tour, and we did have a tour specific shirt. So we're doing a different tour shirt that we're going to do a pre-order for before we go.
It's actually live right now on our website.
Yeah, we literally just launched it today. So you read our minds.
But we have a tour shirt that we were just pre-order only.
Yep.
But if you go to badmary.com, it's on the front page and people can pre-order it.
Yep. Nice. So it's now through June 1st.
Yep.
So up until then, it's all on the website. And there's all of our other stuff too. So it's not just that. We got a whole bunch of shirts, but mm-hmm. that we're They're excited about that one.
You guys have any like off the beaten path merch? Because we had Sons of Silver on, and they have a throw pillow.
Ooh. That's fun.
Yeah.
That is fun. I've been, I feel like we were discussing like sock and boppers or some like weird stuff.
Yeah, we haven't done anything too weird. I think the weirdest, not the weirdest, but we do have enamel pins, but those aren't weird. We have patches and stuff. Like, we didn't do anything too weird.
We did have a feature on our website for a bit that we had a shop that had other items that you could order online. We didn't necessarily have it at shows, but there's probably some like hats and weird stuff in circulation from the website. Yeah.
We've toyed with doing something like a yo-yo or a toothbrush, but we never did it. Instead, around the holidays, we do a show where we have a grab bag full of a bunch of random stuff, and that's the closest we ever got, like beans and like slice of bread or socks. But there's no Bad Mary stuff on them. You could just get it out of the grab bag.
Yeah.
For Tokyo, I know there's like a million different like action figures that they have, like Funko Pops and stuff.
Yeah.
Just that could be like Tokyo specific. Again, I'm just brainstorming for you guys.
I was going to ask, like, if a band was to do like an odd piece of merch, what would you look for? Because I've seen bands do like whistles, sunglasses, mugs, yo-yos, hats, like all the koozies, you know, things like that.
We mentioned to Sons of Silver that monocles might be something because it doesn't completely block your eyes, but you could put the logo on it and it you look distinguished.
I like it.
Or like an eye patch. I feel like that's kind of the same thing because the eye patch would hold better than the monocle because the monocle, you kind of always got to squint like the Monopoly guy, and that's kind of weird.
Yeah.
Also, we like pirates, so that's...
Yeah, pirates are good.
Yeah. How about a foam pirate sword?
Oh, that'd be good.
Here's what I was thinking, though. I did have this idea. I wanted to tell you guys this. I know that we all just met today, but as I was thinking about the interview, I had this great idea that, again... Totally take it. If you can make it work, run with it. I'm not one of those dudes gonna be like, yo, hey, you know, just like the Philly Fanatic, I'm gonna sue you guys so I can get this money. That's not gonna happen. there's an old pinball. One of the things that I love is pinball back glass.
Oh, they're great. Amazing.
The art is beautiful.
So good.
A specific game though, it's called Bad Cats. And this is because of the name Bad Mary, it made me think of this. The back glass is just random cats doing. It's like a big, you know, it's a splash page, right? But it's cats doing things like, not like evil, but like bad things. So like pulling on a string on somebody's sweater or like, you know, swiping, like popping a, like going to pop a balloon of a little kid. It's not like evil, but it's like bad
mischief.
Things. You could make a whole line of shirts of Mary doing things like that. Like, doing a hot foot where you just like, you know, you light a match and you put it under somebody's shoe.
Yeah.
Or like, you know, like itching powder in somebody's like gym bag. Like, I feel like.
Whoopee cushion under someone's chair.
Yes, exactly.
And I like it.
You could make a whole line of shirts and it just almost like, I don't know if you remember, they used to have Dirty Dick shirts. And it was like each shirt was a different, like you could do that. And that could be like merch all the time. And it just has to say Bad Mary on it.
Yeah.
I thought of it and I was like,
that's a fun idea.
That's a really fun idea.
Fun idea, man.
So it just popped into my head and I'm like, you know what? I gotta let that one out because I got no, you know, I can't do anything with it. It's not gonna be brutal dudes, like, you know, that doesn't really work the same way. Like, you gotta be doing something brutal. And it's like, we're not all about hyper violence and you know, hyper masculinity. So it's like, that's not just gonna fly with us. So I was like, let me pass this off.
Yeah, we could have a whole series of Bad Mary shirts.
Yeah.
Bad Mary doing bad things.
Yeah,
I like
right.
I like that a lot.
That's a good stealing idea. Thank
extra,
you.
Stealing an extra cookie out of the jar while her mom is like looking the other way.
That's right.
I don't know. It's just little stuff I was thinking of.
Yeah. A sweet series.
That's a curveball.
Cutting someone's ponytail off when they're not looking.
Ooh, cutting a ponytail. That's a bad one.
That's bad.
That's real bad.
Snapping I've never a bra done strap that. On the back. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's not that's, evil, but that's mean. That's a bad thing.
To yeah, do. It's bad. I like it. I like it.
All right. Yeah. So continue.
So in addition to the tour shirts, are you guys thinking about doing anything like maybe a live record or video or anything while you're there?
So the last time we were there, it all depends on the capabilities we have at the certain venues, which we'll find out once we're there. But the last time we were there, we were able to live stream a lot of our sets onto our social media pages. So that was kind of cool because we were in a completely different time zone. So people at home would be like getting ready for work in the morning, like messaging like, hey, we caught your show, like right before I had to leave the house for work, you know. So that we're going to try to do that as much as possible to kind of live stream the sets. Whenever we have Wi-Fi, we'll be able to kind of hop on and connect with people. As far as recordings, that depends on, sometimes we're able to get a live feed at a club. So, you know, when we find out what our options are and see what we can do, that'll decide that. But hopefully that would be cool to have something.
Definitely.
So, do you have like a performer or band that you'd like, a dream band that you would love to play with, like do a show with?
Oof. It's hard because there's so many.
Yeah.
You know, we played a show in July of last year with the Dolly Rots, who are a band that we've always appreciated and liked. And that was very, very cool. We hung out, we got to meet them and all that stuff. You know, they were awesome and they were so cool to us. And we had a really good time at the Barry Electric in New York City. So that was really awesome. I love that. We've also like had the luxury of being able to play like the Warped Tour and doing other things like that. So like a lot of our dreams are getting checked off as we go. I mean, Japan obviously is another one, but you know, it's hard. You know, I like a lot of 90s punk rock. So a lot of those bands I would love to play with, you know, bands like Rancid or Bad Religion, Green Day.
We're actually having Bucko Nine. I think like 2 weeks are going to be coming on.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Dana knows the lead singer.
Oh, that's awesome. Dana. Yeah. Dana rules.
She was like, I said, do you know Bucko Nine? Cause I saw that she might represent them. And I was like, I've been a fan of them since I was in high school. And I was like,
yeah.
She's like, really? I was like, Irish Drinking Song was literally the song I used to get hyped up for wrestling. So
it's
a classic. And I reached out to him and John was like, yeah, I'll come on. I'm like, all right, cool,
dude. Yeah. Yeah, man. Working with Dana is great. Dana rules. Very, very, very awesome person. And I'm happy that she was able to make that connection for you. But that's sick. Yeah. You know, there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of bands. What about you?
Oh my God. You know, we've seen them live twice and you mentioned them earlier, but I would love to, if it ever happened, like if they came by the Paramount or the City or something again, I would love to play with Blondie,
of course.
Just because they're great. Like I have had so much fun. We've seen them live twice. Clearly I listened to like a lot of the recordings and I never noticed until I think this year how many Blondie shirts I actually own. Like it's one of those things where I have my bands that like I think are my favorite bands, but then when I kind of step back and look at like who I listen to or what our influences are or like how many, you know, photos I've been taken of in shows that we've played where I'm like, I'm in a Blondie shirt there, I'm in a Blondie shirt there, there's a different Blondie shirt, and now I'm in a Blondie shirt at that one, I'm like, well, I guess I like Blondie.
That's your Britney Spears collection, right?
It is.
Yeah.
Like, that's a Britney Spears t-shirt collection.
Oh, that's pretty good.
That's not a joke. That's a legitimate thing.
She's wonderful. If anyone deserves for someone to have a t-shirt collection of them, it's Britney Spears. We should all have a Britney Spears t-shirt collection.
I'll go. That's excellent. Good.
That's
for you.
So cool.
I still
keep, do you have a favorite where I can do an entire week of them? And Britney's one of those artists. I always make sure I have at least 7 Britney shirts that are ready to go.
Again, good. Not a
so
joke.
I can do a Britney week.
That's me with Blondie, definitely.
Also, like for us, you know, it's funny when you say that. It's like 80 million bands get like show up in my brain, and then I forget the name of every band at the same time. But you know, more recently, I would love to play with some newer bands like the Interrupters. I'd love to play with them. They're great. I would love to play with, and then older bands, like if any way, shape or form I can end up on a stage anywhere near around the Misfits, I think that would be very cool. I think that would be awesome, but I don't know if that's feasible. But you know, we've really been lucky as a band to be able to play with some really special people already. So it's really nice.
There's a band that has just been popping up on my shuffle so much because they came up as one of our related artists on Spotify, the Anti-Queens.
Yes.
If they ever, they're from Canada, I believe. So if we ever got there or they got here, we We don't know them. They don't know us, but I would love to play a show with them. I sing along to them in the car all the time. So putting that out into the universe.
Yeah. No, I gotta, you know, it's ultimately in the end, I just want to play with good bands and cool people. That's right. That's it.
Yep. That, because, you know, we play with a group on Long Island, a bunch of Samurai Pizza Cats, and I do want to play with good bands with good people, but I love having the music available to listen to. That's like, that's my friends.
Yes.
So if I'm ever feeling like I need to pick me up or like I need to be surrounded by my friends, like I can literally just go to a music platform and put their music on and it feels like they're there. So that, those connections for me. Yeah. Yep. That's a sentence.